Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, no matter where you're listening, around the world, this is Sedona Talk Radio.
Welcome to At the Movies with Joanna on Sedona Talk Radio. This is Joanna Paxinou, and we're introducing a new segment today, Conversation with a Legend. And I am so thrilled and honored to have with us today a genuine legend, A.C. Lyles, who has just celebrated his 90th birthday and his 80 years with Paramount. Welcome, A.C. I'm so happy you could join us today.
Joanna, thank you so much. It's nice to be talking to you from, as I hear at Paramount Studio, looking out my window on the fourth floor of this building, and I can see all of our 37 stages and all of Los Angeles, and talking to you in Sedona brings back a lot of happy memories.
Oh, that's great. I just want to remind our audience that A.C. has worked in films as well as television features, series, documentaries in his long and successful career, and you're still at the office at Paramount.
Joanna, I come in every day. You know, you have to remain active.
Right? Absolutely. Well, and you are a living part of Hollywood's history.
Well, I thank you. I appreciate it. I went to work at Paramount on my, you know, if you see a movie, it may change your whole life. It changed mine. On my 10th birthday, I saw a picture, Wings, W-I-N-G-S, Clara Bow, Richard Arlen, Charles Buddy Rogers, and a new actor that just had 2 minutes in the film, and those 2 minutes made him not only the biggest star at Paramount, but one of the biggest stars in the history of Hollywood, and his name was Gary Cooper.
Oh, my.
And that day, I was in Jacksonville, Florida, and I said, I want to work for Paramount. And it said, Adolph Zukor Presents. And I said, I want to work for Mr. Zukor. So I went right into the Paramount Theater there, and it's called the Florida Theater, which Paramount owned, and got a job with Paramount, and I wrote Mr. Zukor a letter and told him I was now one of his employees. And just for a couple years later, I was still working at the studio, now as a page boy in uniform, and Mr. Zukor came through, and I, of course, approached him. And I always knew to be aggressive without being intrusive. But I told him I wanted to come out to Hollywood and work for him. He told me to keep in touch. And I wrote him a letter every Sunday and telling him I was coming out. And when I came out to the studio, he was so kind to me and made me his office boy. And he and Cecil B. DeMille, who was the biggest picture maker, biggest director, producer at that time, and one of the biggest in the history of Hollywood, they were my tutors.
Wow.
And they taught me how to make movies and things, so I owe a great debt of gratitude to Adolph Zukor and Cecil B. DeMille.
So at 10 years old, you were determined to work for Paramount, and you made it happen.
I was absolutely determined, yes.
Wow.
And I had big thoughts. I did little things like adding a junior to my name, so maybe people would think my father was very important, which he wasn't. And I also thought big. For instance, I remember being, you know, the thing, 2 plus 2 equals 4. To me, no, it never did. 2 plus 2 meant 22. So that I thought in those terms like that. And I remember someone telling me, A.C., now always remember, it's who you know that counts. I never believed it because I thought who knows you is what counts. And so those little inspirations really helped me out greatly at the studio.
Well, I like your idea of thinking big and having a dream and really going for it. And here you were, 10 years old in Florida. You were determined to work in Hollywood, and you did. You got to Paramount in Hollywood. Did you get to Hollywood? Was it 1936?
Yes. Well, Mr. Zukor told me, he said, I want you to finish school, but you keep in touch. Well, I thought keeping in touch meant writing him every Sunday, which I did. And then shortly after that, Gary Cooper came to town. Now he was the biggest star at Paramount.
Wow.
And I approached him. And I said, you know, Mr. Cooper, I'm going to be at out of Hollywood with you soon. And he said, how do you know that? And I said, well, Mr. Zucker is expecting me. He has a job for me. He said, how do you know that? I said, well, I write him every Tuesday, every Sunday, because he told me to keep in touch. And Mr. Cooper said, have you heard from him? I said, oh, no, but he's just waiting for me. I know he just waits for me to get enough money to get out to Hollywood. So he said, give me a piece of paper. And he said, dear Mr. Zucker, I'm looking forward to, what's your name, kid? I said, A.C. Lowes. He said, I'm looking forward to A.C. Lowes being with us at the studio. Best wishes, Gary Cooper. So that Sunday, I sent, of course, a letter to Mr. Zucker about meeting Gary Cooper. And, you know, Jana, for the first time I heard from Mr. Zucker. Well, not really. I heard from his secretary. And she told me that Mr. Zucker had been getting my mail, and he thought I didn't have to write every Sunday. That wasn't necessary. Just write every 3 or 4 months, and that would be sufficient. But the devil with that, I continued writing Mr. Zucker a letter every Sunday, and then I started writing his secretary a letter every Sunday.
So you were writing both of them?
I was writing both of them, and when I saved my money, I bought a one-way ticket, day coach, on the train from Florida to California, and I think it was 4 days and four nights then. And
wow.
That meant I had to sit up all that time on a bench, you know, with a day coach. And I had 2 loaves of bread, 2 jars of peanut butter, and a sack of apples for my food. And I was Hollywood bound and got out to Hollywood, and I got to the studio and said to the security man, Mr. Zucker is expecting me. He has a job for me. And he said, how do you know that? I said, well, I've been writing him every Sunday. He said, Mr. Zucker gets hundreds of letters. I said, but this one, he told me to keep in touch. So I know he's expecting me. And sure enough, he remembered me and gave me a job at the studio.
Wow. And you remained friends with Mr. Zucker till he passed away. And he was 103. I mean,
103. And I remember on his 98th birthday, I had a birthday party for him.
Oh.
And they always had a cake of me. But now I was a well-known producer at the studio. But and I had this party, and they got pictures of me, his former office boy, cutting his birthday cake. And at the end of the birthday party, I said, Mr. Zucker, half your birthday cake is left. What do you want me to do with it? He said, A.C., keep it till next year. And he, but you know, I would always try when I was his office boy to think of something to ask him, a question, he could answer it. And then we'd get in conversation on that. And one day I remember saying, I said to him, Mr. Zucker, our logo is a mountain and a sky with 22 stars around the mountain. Why do we have 22 stars around the mountain? He said, A.C., we have 22 stars around the mountain because 22 stars fit that space. And that's been a big question in Hollywood. Why are there 22 stars? I'm asked that question more than anything else. But besides teaching me to be a producer, they also gave me incentives when I was a youngster. I was getting $18 a week as Mr. Zucker's office boy. My mother and I were living on it and doing fairly well. And Mr. Zucker and Mr. DeMille would sit me down and on days teaching me to be a producer, sometimes they'd give me incentives, and it always had me write it down, and I saved everything that I wrote.
Wow.
And one of them was, Mr. Zucker said, A.C., we want you to buy a Cadillac. We always want you to look good. A Cadillac will make you look good. I was getting $18 a week, so I wrote down, buy a Cadillac. Yes, Mr. Zucker. And then Mr. DeMille said, A.C., we want you to take your money and buy a lot in Bel Air. That's an exclusive area. It's a good investment. So buy a lot in Bel Air and build your home there. And I said, okay, Mr. DeMille, buy a home in Bel Air. And then Mr. Zucker said, A.C., this is very important. Write this down, and we want you to repeat it a couple of times a day. I said, yes, Mr. Zucker. He said, dress British, but think Yiddish. So I wrote that down, and as I would accomplish things, get the car, I had the car in the parking lot, and as the house was being finished in Bel Air, I said, Mr. Zilker, Mr. DeMille, the house is almost finished. Would you like to see it? So it was not only them teaching me how to be a producer, but also giving me the incentives as to what to do in my life. So I've been very fortunate, Joanna, from the age of 10, knowing, fortunately, what I wanted to do, and to have the privilege of doing it and still doing it, still coming to the office every day, still producing, and enjoying a wonderful life. And because Paramount is my home, I hardly got through school because I was always working at the theater all the time. And when I have to put down education for official recordings or for official paperwork, I say University of Paramount, 5555 Melrose Avenue, Hollywood, California. No one's ever questioned it.
Well, you know, the people who helped you along the way, Cecil B. DeMille, Adolf Zukor, they must have seen a lot of qualities in you, too, to invest so much of their time in you.
Well, thank you, but they couldn't help it because I was very aggressive without being too intrusive.
Well, you were successful. Now, I've been very impressed with your gift of making friends and keeping them for life.
Oh, yes.
And I'm so excited to hear. I know you had a close friendship with James Cagney, and I wonder if you could tell us what he was like off screen and kind of what did you two guys do to get, you know, when you got together?
Well, to begin with, when I was an office boy for Mr. Zucker, James Cagney was the biggest star in Hollywood, and his sister had a small part in a Paramount picture, and I got to know her. And she said, I've told my brother all about you, and he wants to meet you. My goodness, Jimmy Cagney wants to meet me. And she said, he's coming over tomorrow at 2 o'clock. You be here and talk to him. So I managed to get out. I was on the set, and I talked to him. And he said, sit down, talk to me. And we talked a long time, and he said, you know, my sister's right. She knew that I would like you, and I want you to meet the rest of my family. I want you to meet my wife and my brothers and their wives, because we're going to adopt you.
And
he said, take this address down and come Sunday for dinner.
Nice.
The address down, and I said, Mr. Cagney, could you know what bus comes by your house in Beverly Hills? And he said, you don't have a car? I said, no, I didn't have a nickel, let alone a car. And I said, no. So he said, well, you give me your address, and I'll come get you. So I went out, and the family was wonderful to me and things, and when he was driving me back, he said, can you get away for lunch one day? And I said, Mr. Zucker will let me go any place with you. So he said, okay, I'll pick you up Thursday because somebody at Paramount, there's somebody at my studio, Warner Brothers, that I want you to meet. And then he held up his hand, and he, three fingers, and he said, this is me, this is you, and this is the friend that's going to be with us. And then he cupped his hand around these three fingers, and he said, we're going to be friends for life.
Aww.
So he picked me up and took me out to Warner Brothers to meet this new fellow in town that had just did a one day's work in one of Cagney's friends. And we became instant friends, among other things. He had a car. But we became instant friends, and that was Ronald Reagan.
Oh, how wonderful.
And I just thought he was so bright, and I used to say to him, Ronnie, someday you're going to be governor and president, and I have a film when I go out to speak, as I did at lunch today. They run this film, and Ronnie's in the Oval Office, and I had an office in the White House with him. He was president, and he says, I want to tell you the life story of my best friend, A.C. Lyles. In it, he says, A.C. was the first person to tell me that someday I would be president. And he wrote some of his friends letters saying, keep this as evidence that I'm saying Ronald Reagan's going to be president.
Now, what did you see in him?
And
that
Ronnie said, you know, I couldn't let him down, so here I am. Ronnie, you know, the same thing as when you knew Elizabeth Taylor when she was a young girl. You knew she was going to grow up to be a beautiful young lady.
Mm-hmm.
And with Ronnie, if you're around him like I was with Jimmy, you just saw this intelligence, and he kept saying things that he thought should be done, And 20 years, 30 years later, 40 years later, when he was president, why, I could hear him speak or be there when he was speaking. He said, oh, I heard Ronnie speak about this 20 years ago, whatever it was. And it wasn't that difficult to know that one day he would be, he was destined. He was destined to be exactly where he was.
Wow. Well, you certainly were one of the first ones to see that. Also, you mentioned that John Wayne had been one of Paramount's greatest stars.
Yeah.
You were close friends with him, too.
Well, I was very close with Duke, and someone, you know, I said, why do you call him, why do you call him the Duke? You can't very well call him the John. So he was with us, and he produced all the big westerns, and I produced all of the smaller westerns. I was doing 6 features a year, all westerns, and Duke was doing the big ones, including True Grit, that won him the Academy Award.
Yes.
And we got extremely, extremely close in the private dining room where we had our own table. My table was next to Duke's table, and a lot of times we'd pull up tables if we had guests and make it one table in that. And then in 1966, Duke and I won the award from the critics. John Wayne, for being the best actor, and I for being the producer of the best westerns at that time.
Oh, that's exciting.
And John Ford called me to congratulate me. Of course, John was the grandfather of all westerns, and he's the one that found John Wayne and made him a star. And he called to congratulate me. And I said, John, I'm so happy to get it because I'm getting it with my best friend, good pal, John Wayne. He said, the devil with John Wayne. He said, he's a prop man. I made him a star and stagecoach. He said, don't tell people you're getting this big award with your friend John Wayne. He was crusty, but he loved Wayne just his way. He said, I won the award last year. Tell people you're winning the same award for westerns that John Ford won.
But was John Wayne in off the screen, was he the same as he was on the screen? He seemed so likable, such a straight, honest man, very strong.
Duke was just great. He lived down in Newport Beach, and he'd come in by helicopter every day when he worked, or always on Tuesday when he wasn't working. It's interesting that he was born in Winterset, Iowa, 101 years ago. And he was delivered by a country doctor, a woman, at his home. And the home was 500 square feet.
Oh, my.
And it's now the town show place. I'm on the board of directors there. And it's still 5,000 people.
Wow.
Winterset, Iowa. And I'm on the board. We put billboards up on all the freeways saying, visit John Wayne's birthplace with arrows. Last year, 23,000 people stopped by to visit this little house of 500 square feet where Duke was born.
It's amazing that certain stars, they're still so popular, it's as if they're still alive, if the impact they've made on the audience.
Joanna, you're so right. For instance, there's Bogey.
Yes.
There's Cagney. There's Joan Crawford.
Yes.
Betty Davis.
Yes.
And people that are today, it seems, as popular as when they were in their heyday making these epic pictures.
Well, they were all such strong personalities, strong characters that they're unforgettable. Now, I know you've known many, many beautiful women who were stars. Is there any particular film star that stands out in your mind, and can you tell us why?
Yeah, well, there's so many beautiful ladies, I think, in our business, and I knew a lot of them, and when we were younger, we used to date a lot and have dinners and things. I don't think there's anyone more attractive and more talented than Ginger Rogers, and she was a dear, dear close friend, and I don't know of anyone more that was bigger on the screen and everything than someone very dear to me, Joan Crawford.
Yes.
And you take a good friend, Betty Davis. How can you not?
Yes.
Betty Davis. And for beauty, Hedy Lamarr was a dear friend. And
Hedy Lamarr was absolutely stunning.
She must
have been
great. She was a great gal.
Yeah.
Very,
very smart lady, too.
Yeah, she was a very cute gal with a wonderful sense of humor. And how can you not think about a friend of mine, Marilyn Monroe? I met Marilyn. I was in St. Louis opening a picture I had made, and I saw in the paper where they said, we have a lot of new faces in town that haven't done anything yet, but we have great confidence, and named about 15, including someone named Marilyn Monroe. I just love the name. So I tore it out and mailed it to her, just care of the Screen Actors Guild. When I got back to Paramount Studio, there was a call called Marilyn Monroe. And I called, and she thanked me and asked me different questions about the studio, like, did you know Mae West and things? And so I said, well, you want to come over and have lunch one day? She said, I'd love to. So she came over, and we were having lunch, and she was looking around the commissary. And in the commissary was Gary Cooper and Cary Grant and Bob Hope and big people. And I thought she had the hiccups, because she'd go, oh. Then I realized every time she saw a face, a famous face, she'd go, huh. And so she was coming over another day to have lunch with me. By now, she'd made a few pictures and was getting to be known. And she was going to have lunch. As we walked to the commissary, she said, honey, just order me a cup of soup. I said, a cup of soup? Is that all you want for lunch? She said, yes, I just had lunch before I came here. And I said, you just had lunch to come here to have lunch? She said, well, you know, people might want to come over and meet me, and I don't want to be eating when they are here.
Smart.
And before that, there was a columnist in town, Sidney Skolsky, who was very popular, and he had a column in New York and one in Hollywood. And he didn't drive. He didn't have a car, and he didn't drive, but he had about six or eight young people who were just starting out, and he would say, pick me up at 9 o'clock and take me to Fox. And he'd call somebody, pick me up at Fox 11 and take me to Columbia. Pick me up at Columbia and take me to Paramount. And these youngsters would chauffeur him around so that he would take them on the set and introduce them. One of those was Marilyn Monroe, trying to get started. And one day she called me, and she said, what time is it? I said, it's 1:45. She said, Sidney's going to kill me. I said, why? She said, I was supposed to pick him up at noon. I said, you're an hour, Marilyn, or an hour and 45 minutes late.
Oh,
he said, it's worse. I was supposed to pick him up Monday. And she was always a tardy.
Yeah.
But after Clark Gable, she did the Misfits with him, his last picture.
Yes.
And he died a few weeks afterwards.
Yes.
I talked with her, and we had lunch, and she was so upset because, in a way, she imagined, wasn't true, but she imagined that she caused Clark to have this heart attack. Because she said, when we made Misfits, I was late an hour and a half, 2 hours. I kept him waiting. How could I keep him waiting like that and be so inconsiderate? And it punished her very much. Thinking that.
That's a shame. She seemed so vulnerable, but I loved her. I thought she was terrific.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, AC, we've come into the end of our show, and I could talk to you for hours.
Now listen, I could talk to you for hours, so that which means you're going to have to promise when you have some spare time, and whether it be on the air or you just want to chat, you just call me here at Paramount. And you pull up a chair, and I'll put my feet up on the desk, and we'll talk.
I'd love that. And you have an open invitation to come on whenever you have time. I'd love to have you back on the show.
In the meantime, you go to the Walk of Fame, because I'm on your Walk of Fame in Sedona, and that's a beautiful tribute that they paid to me, and I'm grateful for Sedona Walk of Fame for giving me that honor, as I am on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
I know you are, and they have a building named after you in Paramount.
Yes, building at Paramount. Yeah, that's true. I'm right next to Mr. Zucker, of course, and next my other neighbor is Bing Crosby.
Oh,
in the AC Lyles building.
That's wonderful. You really are leading such an extraordinary life. And absolutely.
I'm so happy to be doing it.
And I'm so grateful that you found time to spend with us. It's I wish we could talk for hours, and hopefully we'll talk again soon, but
anytime
I want to thank you.
Thank you so much. And give my best to your daughter.
I will. Thank you. And
thank you
so much. It's been wonderful and thoroughly enjoyable. And before we end, I want to say that when you speak the name of A.C. Lyle, certain words come to mind. Words like legendary, extraordinary, power player, Hollywood insider, great friend, gentleman. In fact, A.C. is regarded as one of Hollywood's most talented and distinguished producers and a man who is much beloved. And in my short time in talking with you, that's a reputation that has been well earned. And I want to thank my listeners. You've been listening to a true legend, the wonderful A.C. Lyles on At the Movies with Joanna on Sedona Talk Radio. This is Joanna Paxinu, and that's a wrap.